Today's date is Tuesday, October 30th, 2007. We are at 5446 Marsh Road in Callahan, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. Today we have the honor of interviewing Mr. Emmett Lee Hostetter. Mr. Hostetter was born on the 10th of September in the year 1912 in the town of Hayden, Virginia.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a town. It was a bunch of, big bunch of farms.
Okay. Oh, that's...
And they had a thing out there, the train didn't stop, and there wasn't too many automobiles. But the train didn't stop, but it had a flag and a seat to sit down on, and when the passenger train come by, they hold up a flag and they stop.
And then they get on.
Yeah, and pay, I don't know, 35, 40 cents to go somewhere. Okay,
my name is Don Hill, and I will interview Mr. Hostetter on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Attending the interview today is Mrs. Hilda Hostetter, the wife of Mr. Hostetter. Also assisting me is Gerhard Tam, who will operate the recording equipment. I will now begin the interview. Mr. Hostetter, you entered the service through the draft, according to your bio sheet, at age 30. You were a little bit older than the 18 and 19-year-old. Where were you and what were you doing when you heard from the draft board and you entered the Naval Service?
I heard from the draft board in Covington, Virginia. That's where I was at then. And I told them, if you want me, you give me transportation. I don't have that kind of money. And they said, okay, we'll take care of that. They transferred me to draft board down here.
In Florida?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Otherwise, I didn't go. I had to go up there. Thank you. And if you want to know where I went to Perry, Virginia. You know where that is? Williamsburg?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
And I think it was Camp Perry. I'm pretty sure it was. I'm not.
Camp Perry for boot camp?
Yeah.
You went back up to Virginia?
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
But I never got to see none of my people because we couldn't come out of there. We had to stay in the camp. And I stayed there 13 weeks. I got 9 days home. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Keep going. You're doing fine.
And then I went back up there. And the very next day, 32 busloads left. We done already had a train and everything. And we I called her and tried to get her to come up there, and she went up there, and I done gone. That was one day. But anyhow, I went to New York, Pier 92. That was a place where the shipwrecked people, like from France or anything that was an ally to the United States, they sent them out to Pier 92 to wait, try to get transportation back home or whatever.
Sort of a holding area awaiting further action.
They had a little hospital there, some kind of thing. It looked like a small battleship for a hospital right beside the Pier 92. But I tell you, it was something else. And you couldn't get a ticket to get out of. And I started working in, I got a job in the ice cream place. And then they gave me my pass to get out of, and so I could get out of there. And I stayed there about, I don't know how long, over a month. And one day they called me, called my name and told me, be ready at 5 o'clock the next morning. But, you know, it hurried up and be late. And I stayed there about a half a day and they put us on a launch. And we went around to East, it was in the East River, that boat, the ship was in the East River. And when we went around the curve, I saw that thing. It was rusty, and I'm sure it come out of the junkyard. It was USS Fredweller. That's what it is. I got the picture, of it, but I can't find the thing. But it was loaded with oil, and it was taken. My granddaughter got it for me somewhere. I don't know where she got it. But we went down, and I said, Lord, I hope I won't get on a thing like that. And we went very straight to it. And the river was rough, and the only way we could get on to catch the ladder is it swung out. The one to get off something was 80-some of us got on it. Mm-hmm. And we stayed on, I think, 13 days. And I know we didn't leave by the first day. A couple of days we were sleeping up in the front of it.
Mr. Hofstetter, what type of ship was that?
It was an oil tanker.
An oil tanker.
Okay.
And it was USS Fredweller. And I know the thing had it been in the junkyard because it wasn't painted, nothing. But they was getting a little desperate for fuel in this country.
Do you remember when that was? That was 1942. Was it like middle of 42 or late in the year after you'd come out of boot camp?
I really don't remember.
That's quite all right.
But, I don't even remember what date was or nothing.
Well, were you on the oiler for duty or just for transportation?
No, transportation.
For transport,
sleeping
okay.
Sleeping up in the nose of it.
I got you.
The only thing we done was stand watch. And but I got up the morning we left. I didn't know anything about that. And I wasn't carrying no papers anyhow, but one guy was. We was out there in the Atlantic Ocean, and I ain't never seen so many ships in my life. It must have been close to 75 or 100 ships. They're all lined up. And then we was moving. And I said, Lord, have mercy. I don't believe a German U-boat would fool if it did say anything. Because you could walk across the thing and you dance the vibration. Whenever it come through it like that, it would make you dance a little bit. But that thing chugged it down for 13 days there. And we wound up in I believe it was Aruba.
Aruba, okay.
Dutch Isle. But we didn't stay there, but we just got our stuff off. Now, that was, they were going to load that oil tank. And there was a sub chaser coming on the side and picked us up and took us to another island. Mm-hmm. Went to another island. They had Marines on there, and they had Army on there, and they had Navy on there, and we took care of the minesweepers and sub chasers. and I was assigned to 105. And I saw them things was in that other. When we were traveling, they was on the side, both sides, in the front and in the back. And maybe you'd see one, and then about a minute back, you wouldn't see it no more. I mean, it was rough.
I'll bet.
Oh, I hope.
Now, you
and
were,
I didn't know where I was going.
You were a seaman, like a seaman second class at this point.
No.
Or a seaman.
Let's see. Seaman. Yeah.
You hadn't made petty officer yet.
No.
Okay.
And, anyhow, we went to Curacao. I always wanted to go back to that island. And my wife, she said, I'd like to go with you. I said, well, you can fly there. But I told her, I guess I never will get to go away. And that's right. Forget about it. Because then the Dutch people didn't have nothing to do with the military. But they had a thing where they could make take that oil out of the well over at the mainland. They'd bring it over there, and they built this thing up over it. And that's where the halt was hauling the gasoline and everything out. And I stayed there, I think about a year.
So you were living ashore.
Yeah.
In a barracks of sorts?
No. They called me on after we got there. He's got 80-something, 82 or something. They called my name, and I went and told them I was a welder. And that's what I was welding on.
Ah.
Navy contract then, and I didn't have it. So they called me down there on the dock, and this here thing was down there, a repair ship. Had it make anything you wanted. They had machine shop, battery shop, radio shop, everything. But the living quarters was on top, and the kitchen and everything.
You ask the question. Hold on. Go ahead.
Tell us, Mr. Hostetler, about YR-32, the repair
barge.
Well, it was a floating dry dock.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wind, I think I got a picture of it. We lived up there, and I said, I'd like to get it out. And I'd already had an inkling I was going on 105. And God told me, he said, hey, why don't you go up there and see the old man? Most of his wells are gone, ain't none. I went up and knocked on his door and went in, and he was from Florida. And I told him what I want. I'd like to get on there. And he said, well, I told him if you want to check on me in the United States, well, you go ahead and I'm telling you the truth. I was first class welder on that. Well, I don't know what numbers it was. But anyhow, I went, he said, go get your sack and bag and come on in here. And about 2 days after, there was a little old town there, Willemstad, I think that's it. Have you got that? Do you know it? Willemstad?
Williamstead, oh yeah, I know that place.
Huh?
I know.
Okay.
Williamstad.
Okay. Well, I was there during the German War, and we operated the way this thing operates, if we lose a screw or something below the water, you could sink the thing that we lived in down so far and run that thing right up in the middle of it, block it up, and pump the water out.
Raise it up, yeah.
And we stayed there, and then I lost the only son that I had. I mean, the biological son. We both of us had a bad marriage, and she had a boy, and I had a boy. And we started talking. She said, I need a father for my son. And I said, I need a mother for my son. And then they're both gone. They're dead. And we still living together. And she stayed here. And she wanted to go back home. I wish she had went on back home. We didn't have nothing. And I just was working, and I bought a lot, $250, $10 down and $10 a month. I was still over there. I don't think I paid anything on it while I was in service. But then we moved back to Guantanamo Bay, and we wasn't there in no time. The German war was over. They'd done whipped the Germans. And these boys that's come from over, and I never had no bad duty. I'm going to tell you that now. Nothing. Only one time a guy asked me to do something, and I wouldn't do it. But I done already read the book. I knew I didn't have to do it. So I didn't get in no trouble. But we went there, and then we come back to Guantanamo, back up out of Guantanamo Bay. But the German U-boats they were practically sailing around on top of the water down. They didn't have nothing, and radar stuff and all that. It wasn't that good then, it wasn't nothing like it is. And them German U-boats said, "I feared, but damn hell, right out of Miami, they surface and watch Americans boat riding." All that stuff. But we got a few of them down there. Because if they could get over top of them before they went too deep, then we'd get them. Because you know them, what's it called?
Depth charges, yeah.
Yeah. Depth charges. Ball is a thing.
Were you a petty officer by now?
Yeah. No, I got first class down there. And then whenever I started welding, and they seen what I was doing, how I was doing, I got third class petty.
Petty officer, third class.
Yeah, and I already they put it in now. I don't know if it. I never seen, but I'd already. They had put me in for second place, but the war was over. But that's another thing. The Japanese we was at Panama at the canal. We was at the canal 13 days before we could even think about going through the. That ship, that ships are going 24 hours a day. And they was bringing these boys back from Europe. And they got cologne. Mm-hmm. And they let them boys take liberty And they was about to tear the place up because they was mad. And the old man called us all back in and told us that just come on back here. Don't step on and get in there. And we didn't get in there. But we, 13 days in, we got in the canal. And we took, and they had already dropped two bombs. Hiroshima, and I think it was, and was it Nagasaki? Okay, them two. But they give them another ultimatum. I mean, during that time, Roosevelt had died, you know. They said the next one was going on Tokyo. And boy, they jumped up and quit way crazy. But a lot of them didn't know anything about what was in them islands. That was shit. But we were 3 days out in the Pacific. That's how much time I spent in the Pacific.
What ship was it?
And the war was over. We got off, I don't know, probably 15 days. We turned around and went at a terminal island.
Were you still on YR-32?
Yeah.
It had gone through the canal, out into the Pacific.
In the Pacific.
And you were 3 days out and turned back towards San Francisco.
Yeah. But I imagine they told a lot of stories, but you know what you hear, don't mind. That the Japanese was even armed their kids. Any of them could pull a trigger. And they was going to fight till it was all over. But I guess they decided they didn't want another one of them bombers on America again. Killed 80, 90, 100 down, and our kids and all. But then I left, when I left there, I stayed out there. Well, I was out there about a month or two. She knew I was there, but she said, I don't believe I want a chance of going again like I did before. She went to New York and I had trouble. But I finally made it home. In October, I think it was, come on. And I was getting out on numbers, points.
On the point system.
Yeah. But I'd had another, when I come home, I had 30 days and 8 days traveling down because I was from Florida, but anything from the Mississippi River back that way, you only got 6 days. And I got sick, and they put me in the hospital, and that slowed me down again. So,
this is when you were still in the Navy. You became ill.
Oh, yeah.
Where did you go in the hospital? At Treasure Island in San Francisco? Or?
No, they had some kind of a hospital right closer. I don't know where it was.
Oh, there was a big naval hospital in Oakland, I think.
It might have been, but I heard I had something wrong about kidneys or something. But they straightened it out, whatever it was. And I asked old man, I called him old man, and everybody else did, if I could go when I got out. And he said, no, you can only so many go. I was supposed to be in the first ones come home. And he said, somebody else has got. And I remember this guy, Joy Davis. He was from Memphis, Tennessee. And he was in the 6 day limit. And he was the first one to come. And as soon as I saw him coming, well, I went after the old man. And he said, well, you get ready and you can leave here tonight. And I was 3 days and three nights coming from California to Jacksonville, Florida.
And you were discharged at this point? You were out of the Navy?
No.
Or you came back here?
I was still in.
Uh-huh.
November, I believe it was November, I had enough point to get out. And I would have been out there. I only had two more days. So I took a chance, and I called them and told them, I know you're going to send me back here because this is where I come from. I ain't got but two more days. And they sent it right back and told me to stay at home. I didn't get my clothes, I didn't get nothing. It was just what I had. But I was glad to get out of it. But I got out, I think it was December the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Of 1945.
Yeah, at the Naval Air Station. Same place that I went in there.
Wow.
Jacksonville Naval Air Station?
Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned a gentleman named George Davis, and I know you've mentioned Hilda throughout this as being your partner through this entire process.
Yeah.
Were there any other special people that you've met in your service time that made a positive impact on you?
Well,
an old chief or somebody like that?
Yeah, well, Hank Thompson. I'm not sure about that Thompson. He stayed in touch with me and Christmas cards. And I think his wife came out there, and he was from Connecticut. And there was another Frenchman, Tony Devo. He's the one that told me when my son got killed. He got killed. And I asked him what was wrong. And he said, I don't know. He wouldn't tell me. And I didn't know nothing about that until I come back. I come home. They got me home. I rode an airplane. It had 3-inch pipe in it. And I was the only passenger in there beside the crew. And I didn't see them. And I rode from Curacao to well, it was one of them other islands where the plane was coming to Miami, and I went to get on the plane, and they said it's loaded. And the pilot said, is there anybody here that wants to stick around a few more days? And one guy, and he was an officer too, pretty high. He said, I ain't in no hurry, you know. He didn't have my seat. We stopped at Guantanamo Bay. And another guy dragged me off. You could do that now. But that pilot told me he didn't drag him off. He's got a higher rating seat than you are. And he did have it. And he could have stopped me right then. But I got all the way home with him. But I'll just say this. God's been good to me. And I wasn't serving him. And I didn't know what was coming. I didn't know, but I'd done everything that I was supposed to do. I never had no trouble with him. And I know one old boy, he got his leg cut off. He got drunk. And one of them, when we left him on the train, they had he got drunk. But I never drank whiskey or nothing like that. I had a poor dad and a good mother. And if it hadn't been for her, and then the years we've spent 64 or 65 years right here in Florida. And we've lived in several places. And we buy an old house, and me and her fix it up. We sell it, make a few dollars off of it, go somewhere else. We had a place in North Carolina. We had a place in Georgia. And we had a place in South Florida and Central Florida.
When did you come here to Nassau County, to Callahan?
Huh?
When did you come to Callahan?
When did you arrive in Nassau County?
Nassau County? I think it's 82.
Okay. Why did you come here?
Huh?
Why did you come here?
Well, like I said, we both had a bad marriage. I was working in Charleston, West Virginia, but I lived in Covington. And this woman, I married to her, and I did not leave her. She left me with the boy. She didn't want him. And when I went out there, and there I was trying to raise him, and I wasn't doing a very good job at it, because you know you got to work and everything. But and then I met her in West Virginia, and then I started dating her, and then, we was hitting it off pretty good, and my boy was a little bit older than she, hers was. But I always wanted to dig in the ground, a farm. I worked on a farm when I was 13 years old. So I saw this place. Another guy saw it. And he told me, wasn't nothing here. Pine trees and everything. We've been here 24 years, I think. And we lived in Jacksonville for 40 years.
Hmm.
And I built my own home after I come out of service. Sold it for $2,500. And just about a month ago, that same house sold for $100,000. And I said, Lord, if I could just talk to them people of what I put in it. I work construction work here. And I got nails out of concrete stuff. We'd clean it up and then use it again. Mm-hmm. And I took me a paper bag down there, and all them nails, I put them in a bag. And we'd come home, and me and her both worked on them, yes. And you couldn't buy nothing. Yeah. You couldn't buy no nails. Or you couldn't buy nothing. And then we built our house out of rough lumber and lived there 40 years.
Any other recollections, Mr. Hostetter, about your naval service that you'd like to share with us and share with a grateful nation?
Well, no. If I'd have been 6 months longer, I'd have been first class, because I knew what to do and how to do it. But when I went in, one eye and a trigger finger. That's all you had to have to get in. I can tell you that now. I was in the draft. But they kept on sending me back home. And that I didn't like. And I told him, I said, now, you all either leave me alone and let me go about my life, or you either take me on. And that was the last time I said that to him. But they go down at the post office, and then we go somewhere another and be examined again. But I stayed in Blanding 3 days, being examined, and they said you can get in the Navy, the Army, and the Coast Guard. And I said, well, I'll take the Navy. I always liked the Navy, and I liked boats. Now I hate boats. They said, hey, yes, go ride on a boat or something. I said, I want to ride on a boat. I done already rode enough.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your recollections with us for the benefit of our nation, Mr. Hostetter. It's been an honor to be here with you this morning, and we thank you very, very much.
Okay.
This concludes the interview with Mr. Emmett Hostetter of Callahan, Florida.